Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Wednesday, January 30th, 2013. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. Yvonne Bo is very sleepy because I'm a little bit later than we'd planned. Because I had this thing going on all day at work. It was a training session. It was an all-day freaking training session. And I won't
All-day training? Oh, Jesus.
And I won't go into details, but... It was one of the touchy-feely ones where you have to emote and talk about how you feel and things like that.
I took an hour and a half diversity training today, and there was a section on it that I got really pissed off about.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not even going to go there because it's just, I don't know, whoever did this obviously doesn't know shit about diversity is what I came up with.
Yeah.
I was like, seriously? I'm like, okay, this is diversity done by a white boy. Okay.
Yeah, well, this is one of ones, you know, I may not always sound like it on the podcast, but Yvonne, knowing me in person, I'm an introverted kind of guy. Like, you know, in a zone where I'm like in my comfort zone, like this podcast, I'll speak out and stuff. But if you put me like in a group of people I don't know, like, that is so unpleasant for me and so stressful, and I do not want to be there and blah, blah, blah. And so
unlike me, who I'm pretty much like this everywhere. It doesn't fuck up.
Yeah. So I had 8 hours of going through exercises where I had to sit in little groups of people and talk about how I felt about stuff.
Oh God.
So
a love of God. Are you fucking kidding me?
So, you know,
hey, listen, even I would like want to fucking run out of that place like and kill somebody after that.
So yeah, so I'm like, you know, I and of course, but, you know, my stress builds over the time, and I'm like, you know, okay, there's some lessons you can get out of it. It's not entirely worthless. And I'll even say, you know, it's a useful exercise, I'll grant it. But 8 hours is a bit much for me, you know?
Yeah, 8 hours on any training is just a bit much. I mean, that's...
We started at 8:30 in the morning and got out at 5.
Wow.
We did have a lunch break and a couple other breaks.
Yeah, my training today was only about an hour and a half, so that was bearable.
Anyway, so I left there, and it took me a while to get home. So Yvonne's like half asleep now. But we do have real topics.
Well, I will mention like why the heck I got pissed off. They put this example in there of like, oh, there's two people speaking in another language, like somewhere nearby, and other people are feeling that this is rude. And I went, and I just had to say in the middle of the thing, I'm like, I'm sorry. You know what? I live in an area where everybody is speaking a different language. And if you're offended by other people speaking another language, you got a serious problem. Okay? I mean, it's a common occurrence. I'm like, I got people speaking in Portuguese on one side of the table. I got people speaking I go to the supermarket, people speaking Creole. I'm like, really?
They're just talking on the street. They're not talking like a scenario where
No, they're talking a scenario in the office. And I've got people doing that. But my point is that, you see, here's the problem. They put it – this was rude as speaking another language. And that wasn't what was rude. What's rude is two people actually inside a meeting having their own little meeting, no matter what the fuck language it is, okay? Because if two people are over in a corner and like that, and you don't even know, and all of a sudden you hear them, ha 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 ha.
Yeah,
having a fucking meeting.
What's rude is specifically, right? If you're speaking the other language specifically to be able to talk in front of the other guy without them knowing what you're saying.
Right. That's rude. But my point is that I'm sorry, but the problem is, you know, people speaking another language in front of you, you don't understand, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, they got the right to have their conversation. My point is that they were bringing it in a meeting scenario, and I don't care if I've got somebody else in my office. Like, I got friends of mine in the office who are Cuban. Like, dude, we talk in Spanish a couple of times. It doesn't matter, like, whatever, because, mm-hmm. you know, we feel more comfortable speaking in Spanish. But, you know, if I'm in a meeting – okay, with other people, and I'm speaking in Spanish, you know, like with the other people, like having my own side conversation. My point is that the side conversation is really the problem that is rude. It's people inside a meeting not being in the meeting and carrying on their onside conversations and ignoring the main meeting.
And so the same thing would apply if they were passing notes or sending email to each other or whatever.
Exactly my point. And they were making it out that the fucking language. And some idiot comes up, well, I don't like people speaking another language, whatever. And I'm like, you know what? I was almost like, you know what, bitch, get educated. I'm like, fuck you. I'm like, you know what? I was like, get a fucking education. Get the fuck out of my face. Okay? All right?
So you're working on your sensitivity training next, huh?
Yeah, I was doing really good. Fuck.
So anyway, we've got a few things. We're going to talk about Egypt. There are a few things going on there. We're going to talk about the latest immigration developments. We're going to talk about mobile OSs other than Mac, than iOS and Android.
Right.
I have a few observations just about my neighborhood as I've been walking around here. But first, before any of that, just a really quick piece of feedback that I've been forgetting the last couple of weeks, and it came in, and I don't have it in front of me, so I'm doing this by memory.
Oh, boy, jeez. Okay.
This is Bruce, who guested on this show a couple times. He listened to our prediction show and criticized, saying, we made a prediction about how well our predictions would do. And he said that was just like a recursive nightmare.
Yes, I know.
We just couldn't do that, And I forget. I replied about something about the world imploding or something. I don't know. But, there is actually an edge case scenario where whether or not we did better than last year depends on whether we get the question right about whether or not we got better than last year.
Oh, fuck me. Right.
And that would be a strange situation to be in, but I'm guessing we won't be there.
Probably not.
Anyway, so let's jump right in. What do you want to do first?
Whatever you want to do first. Don't make me make any decisions at this right now at this juncture.
Okay, let's start with Egypt.
Egypt. Okay.
Go for it. Tell us what's been going on in Egypt.
Well, you want me to tell you what's going on in Egypt?
I want you to tell me what's been going on in Egypt.
Well, apparently, ever since the anniversary of the whole, bring down, what was his name?
Mubarak?
Yeah, I was going to say something.
You're going to say King Tut or something?
No. So ever since the whole Mubarak things would go the anniversary, protests has been springing down the street. It's been an ongoing, clashes, and it's been bad. So today, I guess the military chief warned that that if the unrest doesn't stop, that they're going to go and, fucking start, cracking they're going to impose order.
Well, and they've already declared state of emergency in several cities.
Right. This goes back to this whole thing that we're talking about. Goes back to the whole Mali thing, the whole Libya thing, the whole Syria thing, and how, everybody's celebrating this whole Arab Spring, and it's just been a lot of chaos.
As a generic statement that is almost always true, when something happens that removes the old order, it is almost never immediately replaced by in an orderly fashion by something better and wonderful. There's almost always a period of chaos.
Yeah, it's just the fucking Morsi comes into power and then he decides to fucking we've been 50 years of secularism, fuck you everybody, I'm gonna do what
the details of that process, and we talked about this back when the election happened. First of all, the revolution was spearheaded by a lot of folks who were more, liberally oriented, in alliance, by the way, with folks like the Muslim Brotherhood. But there was a lot of the people who were out there on Tahrir Square and stuff. They were calling for the end of dictatorship and more freedom and blah, 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 blah. Then they had this election process, this multi-stage election process. And the problem was the populace was so segmented. They had an election with everybody who wanted to run, and then a runoff on the top two. Well, the top two, neither one of them were all that popular, but there were so many candidates that the vote was completely split all over the place. And so you had the top two, and nobody really, I shouldn't say nobody, you didn't have an overwhelming support for either one of those top two candidates. It was Morsi from the Muslim Brotherhood, and then it was somebody who was a member of the former Mubarak regime. In the top two, if I remember correctly. Check me. Am I right there?
I think it sounds right, yes.
And so, you know, a lot of people held their noses and voted for the what they thought were the better of two not-so-great options. And so you got Morsi in there, and immediately, like, this is not, should not be a big surprise, because the people who were directly supporting him were, you know, like 20-25% or something. And I don't have those numbers in front of me. I'm making them up. But you know, before the second round of the election. And so, of course, you've got a lot of people who he wasn't their first choice. He's not who they really wanted. And you've got a lot of disappointment out there from, you know, from all sectors saying, okay, this isn't exactly what I wanted. And so, you know, you got a lot of the protesters coming back into the streets now. And you're going to have some more chaos. I don't know what's next for Egypt. I apologized last week for not being an expert in the areas. I'm certainly not an expert in Egypt either. But
I figured you'd be happy about this. This chaos? Is a lot of chaos. Yeah.
Chaos is fun to watch.
Is this your gig?
Chaos is interesting. I give you that, but it's at the same time, you don't want to see like a lot of human misery in the process, you know.
That I can see how that could suck.
And so far, I mean, Egypt is a far cry from like Syria, for instance. They're not like hundreds of people dying every week, but you know, it's in an unstable place. And you mentioned the rest of the region. The rest of the region is a pretty unstable place too right now. I mean, you took out the governments in several countries in rapid succession. You've got dynamic transitions in place. You've got governments that aren't, you know, Egypt is a bit stronger, but some of these other governments don't have you know, a lot of strength left in them, especially the new governments. Even when you had like somebody like Gaddafi that had a lot of power to keep things under control, you take him out of the equation and you have somewhat anarchy, and you have a new government that's fairly weak, is having trouble imposing control. You have a lot of people that were involved in the conflict, you know, heading south back to their home countries and causing trouble there. And yeah, it's a mess. And it's, you know, we had the debate last week about whether we'll still be talking about Mali in July. And I think that's more a question of American attention span and whether we're going to be talking about it. Are there still going to be things going on in this region that are dynamic?
Heard today, absolutely. Like, wasn't it that we just apparently cut a deal with some government, some country in Africa in order to freaking have troops there? You didn't see it? Well, of course you were at a diversity training.
I was at diversity training all day. Or not diversity.
Whatever. Yeah. Something training all day. Yeah, there was on the news. Hold on. Let's see. Where the heck was it? I just saw this news blurb a little bit ago.
Well, I know that we are talking about increasing our level of involvement in support of the French and in support of some of these other things.
Yeah,
this is more than that.
Let me see. Okay.
Well, we already have a small number of troops in Central Africa related to one thing or another.
Okay, I am pretty sure I saw a blurb today about something about us putting some troops in Africa somewhere. Not directly in the line of fire of this, but in some country adjacent to the whole mess.
Okay. Well, like I said, we've already got some in there. So this is...
But I guess they're just putting in more. I don't know. This is a new deal.
Yeah, okay. I don't know anything about it. I was in training, so...
It was just some blurb I saw today in the news. So, you know,
we'll see if this whole thing escalates out of control. I mean, your prediction is basically that this is going to escalate and continue to be a big deal for the U.S. For most of this year.
That's what it seems like at this point.
My thought is that, you know, there's going to be chaos going on, but I'm not sure it's going to be top of mind here in the U.S. I mean, and to be clear, I think the U.S. is going to have its fingers in it. The U.S. has our fingers in everything, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be, you know, the stuff we're talking about, as it were. But, you know, this whole region's going through a dramatic transition period, you know, and that's going to continue. It's going to take a while for things to settle out. I mean, we're probably talking years for things to settle out, not months. So,
well, I mean, I know, but well, this whole thing just keeps dragging out. It just seems like there's like. It's not like this was one thing that happened in one country. It's just all of a sudden, like, all these countries are having, you know, this backlash against regimes and everything that happened for such a long time. And it's given an opening to a whole bunch of other groups that have been trying to basically stick their nose in and, like, do some mischief. And I don't know. I mean, it's a very complicated situation. Let's just put it that way. And I think that we're, you know, we are going to get dragged into a whole bunch of shit that we probably never wanted to get dragged into in the first place.
Well, and this is what I'm hoping you're wrong. I'm hoping that, you know, the Obama administration has the sense to say, you know, look, things are happening here, but this has to be a local issue. The local countries involved have to take the lead here. Maybe we'll provide some limited support when asked, but, you know, this
is... It's just that I don't know if we're going to be able to do that specifically, you know, because of what happened over in, you know, the whole invasion. They took... These guys want to use this as a platform to launch other terrorist attacks.
But here's the thing, and you mentioned this last week, and I've been thinking about it a little bit more. I mean, part of the issue here, like, what's going on here in these countries is very much primarily... a battle for local control. It is a local conflict with local issues. And yes, there are religious overtones and there are ethnic overtones, but it's primarily a local issue. The place where it becomes an international issue and where you is when the foreign powers start getting involved. And then it's all becomes about repel the American Satan or the French Satan or whatever.
Repel the Satan! I like that.
But there you go. There's our show title. But, you know, look, that's where it becomes internationalized is when we stick our noses in it. If we don't, then, you know, okay, we got local people fighting each other. It's a disaster
but you're
locally.
Saying that, but let's face it, we didn't do this. The guys that took over the refinery and decided to take all sorts of fucking foreign hostages were not us.
Well, I mean, you can argue that the mere existence of that refinery there, owned by foreign powers and not by local government,
it wasn't,
is part
I mean,
of it.
I mean, they were just employees there. But there were subcontractors of the Algerian government.
True, but also that there's a history there of, you know, doing these kinds of things for ransom. We have the power of overreacting and causing the issue to get worse than it would otherwise. And, you know, you can mention, you know, back in the day, Osama bin Laden doing things and using Afghanistan as a base, using, where was he before then? The Sudan as a base, whatever, you know, but all of Osama bin Laden and his actions were arguably, I mean, according to Osama's own words, were triggered by our presence in Saudi Arabia during the first Gulf War. I mean, so all of these things feed on each other, you know, and every time we get involved, and we've talked about this with the drone battles as well, you know, when we go in and start killing people, guess what? Everybody we kill, all of their relatives, whatever they thought beforehand, suddenly become anti-American. You know, and so this is where we have to be very, very careful, you know, because our presence, by its very existence, escalates the situation. Whereas without us, if we just stood back and said, you know, it's a tragedy, but whatever's happening here is going to happen, we won't get involved unless and until there's an explicit threat, credible threat against us. If we said that, these things might very well explode and then fizzle out on their own.
Well, I don't know. Let's face it. I mean, you know, the reality is that if you go back like 11, you know, when we got hit by September 11th, it's not like we were actively invading any of these fucking countries. I mean, we weren't. I mean,
well, no,
I don't know.
We were still heavily present in many countries in the Middle East. We were still a presence that our presence there antagonized, you know, all sorts of interests there, and it made us mad at them. Now, I'm not, I want to be clear here, I'm not saying that that's a good reason to drive some airplanes into some buildings and kill thousands of people. However,
it isn't.
However, it's okay. Understandable.
Well,
it's
but, okay.
It is part of the to and fro where you know if you are what's the old phrase? If you start sticking a stick into a beehive, don't be surprised if you're stung. You know, and in many cases here, we have acted as an antagonistic force that's been sort of rattling people's cages, and of course they're going to get upset and do what they see as defending themselves and sometimes go on the offense. And, you know, and I want to be clear, if we have vital interests, I'm not saying we don't get involved. But I am saying that we should have a very restrictive view of what a vital interest really is and when do we need to get involved, because there are often very significant negative side effects to getting involved. So we need to do it only when we really need to, not just because we feel like it.
No, I do agree. It's just, you know, I guess the criteria is the issue. Yep. All right, look.
Let's take a break. Because Yvonne's going to fall asleep any moment now. So we'll be back after this.
Yep.
And we'll talk about...
If you're snoring during the show, don't be surprised.
Yeah. So we'll and this will relate to my topic at the end. We will be back after this message and talk about immigration. And here we are. So... immigration. I was actually, you know, I knew this was going to be on the agenda for Obama's second administration, and I vaguely knew that he was thinking about going out and giving a speech, but a group in the Senate actually got out ahead of him. And it was a bipartisan group, and I'm like, oh, there you go.
Well,
tell me more.
So the question is regarding this, because I haven't seen the details yet of what the proposal that the Senate gang
and
went out,
either.
Which Obama has endorsed. Okay, you know,
yeah,
as a great start,
it,
by the way.
Yeah, he said
okay,
it was
so,
very much along the same lines he was thinking.
So, yeah, so I guess the question is, are we really going to get some fucking legislation out of this fucking, like, House and Senate, like, this
so
time around?
I think there's some very interesting things here, and, you know, this relates to our prediction about how many laws will get passed in this year and stuff like this, but we'd mentioned that it looked like there were some signs that the moderate Republicans were starting to take control again from, you know, the Tea Party more radical guys. And I think this was further evidence in that direction.
Yeah.
Because, you know, first, you know, in the Senate has always been more moderate than the House. And that's where the trick on this is going to be in the House. But so we have some moderate Republicans and some moderate Democrats coming together and saying, hey, we actually agree on a lot of stuff here. So let's forget the stuff we don't agree on. Let's write down the stuff we do agree on and get something done. And you see that happening. The question is, what'll happen in the House? And whether you push things forward there. And what I can see is Bonnier sort of set the precedent a couple times already with the debt limit and with Sandy relief and with the fiscal cliff. In all three of these cases, he's thrown out the old Hastert rule that you had to have the majority of the Republicans to even bring it to the floor. And he's brought things to the floor that have won with most of the Democrats and a few Republicans.
Right.
If he's willing to do that again, there's going to be more stuff getting done. And Bonnier himself is one of the more moderate-ish traditional Republicans, and it seems like he wants to get stuff done, and he's getting to the point where he's like, you know, the more extreme wing of my party, we're not going to let them hold everything hostage. I mean, that's what it's seeming like to me. And it's a very interesting development. We'll see if it continues. But if it does, then yeah, we might actually see stuff going through, because I think there actually is, you know, a decent amount of stuff that the less radical Republicans can agree to, that the liberal Democrats can sort of say, okay, it's not all we want, but at least it pushes the ball forward.
And right, so no, you may totally see more agree. Of those.
So you mentioned you haven't looked at the specifics, but any general thoughts on sort of the immigration problem and what is happening and what needs to be done or not? Or
well, look, there's a couple of things. I mean, a whole bunch of people were talking about creating immigration allowance. I mean, right now, other countries have skill-based visas, okay? Basically, you know, you're a highly educated engineer. You can apply for a visa, okay? Simple as that. You don't have to have a company hiring you, okay, up front in order to do it. They will, you can come in and, like, get a visa without an employer having to be your sponsor for it. And I think that that's something where they're driving towards that. They're trying to do that, which we have not been doing that before. But also they're proposing a path to citizenship for currently existing illegal immigrants. There was a lot of things that were all positive in my view. I mean, you know, it just seemed like a lot of the stuff was logical stuff that we should be doing. The one thing that I keep seeing, like, all over the place, and that it's just kind of annoying. Marco Rubio seems to be doing all these votes and, like, he's definitely running for president.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy is just fucking, like, number one, he voted against the tax package in the Senate. Okay. All right. I'm pretty sure that the reason he did that, he figured it was going to pass, but I think he figured it's like, well, that way I can claim I didn't raise taxes. Okay. And now he started making all these speeches today, even after you had a group of Republicans and Democrats coming out and, like, putting something forward. He also started just saying a whole bunch of shit about the whole thing. So, you know, it's like, it's kind of annoying about the whole thing. But look, I think that we've got all of a sudden, apparently, a pretty broad consensus on what we should do about immigration, which we definitely didn't have for a very long time. Yes, there are some fringe groups and whatever that are going to be, like, against it, but I think that we got a shot here at getting something done pretty good soon. I'm pretty excited.
And so basically the what's the summary? We're talking a path for citizenship.
You're talking about a path
for
citizenship for people that are in the U.S. You're talking about changing the way that we allocate immigration, you know, to people in order to also bring into it skill-based visas and other stuff, which we're not doing right now. Okay, I think those were the two biggest things where we were going to be able to do some logical redistribution of how we go and bring immigrants into the country. Okay, which, because right now the way is just nonsensical at this point.
Well, and this ties into, you know, this sort of almost commonsensical statement that how do you deal with the problem of illegal immigration? Make it easier to immigrate legally.
Right. I mean, make it easy and logical to a certain extent. Provide provisions to bring in laborers into the country. Okay, for example, temporary laborers. Provide provisions for highly skilled workers to be able to come into the country. You know,
And there's a lot of fear of immigrants and immigrants changing the culture, and oh my God, they're not, like, you know, they're not white Protestant guys, you know, but this is like, this has been the history of the United States. And you've always had the groups that were here earlier, afraid of the groups that were coming in later, but the influx has always strengthened the country.
Absolutely.
The influx has always brought fresh new opinions and ideas and more dynamic culture, and it's that mixing that... You know, and this is arguable, of course, but that has provided a lot of the resilience and strength behind this country and how it's adapted over time. And so it's always seemed like a little bit weird to me, all of these people who are like, oh, it was fine when my grandfather came here, but no, we can't let anybody else in now.
Right.
And I mean, you know, I've seen people with signs of like, okay, it's full now, no more. And no, come
yeah,
on.
We're full. We're fucking full, my ass. It's like these fucking people. I'm like, seriously, we got 300 million people in a country, you know, the size of ours. I mean, for God's sakes, the Chinese have a country about the size of ours, and they got 1.2 billion. Give me a break.
You know, now, I mean, at the same time, I do understand somewhat the, okay, I'm not necessarily saying the right answer is just completely open the borders. Anybody can come, no paperwork, no nothing, just go wherever you want. Although that would be an interesting experiment, I must say. But, you know,
we used to do that 100 years ago.
Basically. I mean, there were some restrictions even then.
But very few.
Well,
it
depends.
You fucking got in a boat, you showed up, you fucking got in.
There were more restrictions on Asians than there were on Europeans at that time.
Right.
But there were restrictions.
Right. There were restrictions, but there were, like, substantially less.
Yeah, and anyway. But the detailed history aside, I do understand the desire to say, okay, like you said, skills-based stuff. Let's, you know, let people in based on how much we need their skills.
Right.
So in areas we have shortages, open the floodgates.
Right.
In areas where we have a glut, okay, maybe not so much.
Right.
You know, and I can understand that. I can understand that. You know, but... I certainly see the idea of, you know, hey, people who, regardless of whether they came in here legally or not, if they've been constructive and law abiding other than getting in illegally, and have generally been a benefit and they've been paying their taxes and whatever, you know, why not give them a way to become legal?
It drives me crazy. Like, for example, you've got countries like, you know, the UK has this highly skilled migrant program, okay? You know, it's like there's a scoring system depending on your education, the degree, blah, 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 blah. Hey, you meet it, you can get in, okay? I mean, and sometimes they close the spigot when they've got, like, slow periods or whatever, whatnot. But, I mean, why doesn't that make sense? I mean, that's the one thing. It's like... I mean, and Canada has a program like that, too. I mean, to me, it's just, you know, just common sense.
And definitely, to step back a little bit further, the whole Dream Act kind of thing, the people who were brought here through no fault of their own when they were small children and never have had any knowledge of anywhere else, you know, I know Obama did some things by executive order on that, you know, and I think those are perfectly appropriate. The notion that you would take some of these kids and say, you know, you may never have lived anywhere other than Oklahoma in your entire life, but hey, your parents came here illegally, so we're sending you back to wherever. It was mind-boggling to me. It's like, really? What are you doing to that kid? You know?
Right. Right.
Anyway. Any more thoughts on immigration?
No.
Okay, let's move on. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about mobile OSs other than iOS and Android. I bet you forgot that there actually were any out there. But we'll be back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then... let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
And we're back. So, Yvonne, you mentioned like the name of one, and I was like, I've never even heard of that. And then you mentioned BlackBerry, and I was like, oh yeah,
well,
they still exist.
Look, there is this OS. Okay, it's an open source. By the way, it's at version 2.0 alpha right now, SDK. Okay, and there's source code. There's even a developer conference, by the way, this summer. Okay,
what's this
for this OS
called
Tizen? It's T-I-Z as in zebra, E-N. Okay,
T-I-Z-E-N. Okay.
Yes. Okay. And this is a.
I'm Googling it right now.
Okay. It's an open source OS. Okay. That it's for devices including smartphones, tablets, whatever the heck it is. Bottom line is that this is. Samsung has already committed to launching phones using this. Okay. Sometime later this year. It's one of those things where you're seeing. This battle for control of software and the device move into quite a different scenario. Let's put it to you this way. Google has decided basically to almost like launch war against their own hardware manufacturers, primarily Samsung, okay, which is really the only one that's really making money out of this shit, okay, at this point. And I'm like, I mean, what do they expect Samsung to do? I mean, if you're going to make hardware and to compete against them, well, I guess they're going to try to move to another OS.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's an early stage right now, but Samsung's committed to, I think here's a date, it's confirmed in January 2013 that Samsung will launch several Tizen-powered, smartphones in Q1 or Q2 2013. So this is like actually like, you know,
soon.
Within the next 6 months, okay? Think about what does this do to Google if Samsung starts moving away from Android? And what does it do to that ecosystem? I mean, that's a big blow, okay? I'm looking, there appear to be, let me see what it says here. HTML5 applications run on Tizen. So you can run HTML5. Android apps can run on Tizen devices with Open Mobile's ACL. So it can run Android apps. So it's got a whole bunch of features
Look, we talked about this in regard to laptops and desktops as well, like a while back. There is a perfect opening here for more manufacturers to go the Apple model.
Sure.
Of saying, we control the whole stack, the hardware and the software. We're doing the whole thing.
Right.
Also, Google Chrome is still out there too, but the basic idea there is having an operating system that's basically nothing but an interface to the web. And
right.
That's also got potential legs here because, more and more, what do you use computing devices for? You access the network. You store
Correct.
Your stuff on the network. You do your work on the network. The device is just a gateway to that. And so there's room for a very thin layer for lots of things. Games may be an exception there. And a few other things. But there's all kinds of opportunity here. And, we talked a couple years ago when it was somewhat exciting when HP bought the Palm stuff.
Right.
Where we said, oh, look, they're going to go independent. They're going to do...
And then, of course, HP brought in a new CEO who torpedoed the whole thing.
Right. But, the exciting part was the notion of... Once again, going back to it's like going back in time to the 70s, where every computer.
We may be going there, by the way. Uh-huh. All right, I don't know if you saw it. So I was making jokes about this whole Dell and HP merger, but but let me tell you something that this is becoming less crazy as every day goes on, because I don't know if you saw it. So Dell has decided to do a leverage buyout. They're they're doing a buyout. They want to go private.
I saw
but
that.
One of the biggest investors is Microsoft.
Mm.
Now, I got to tell you something. If in the end what winds up happening is Microsoft winds up owning Dell, What the hell stops them from buying HP's hardware business?
Right.
For consumers? Nothing.
Yeah.
Basically, Microsoft winds up buying out the hardware partners and we're done.
Yeah, then you really do have, you know, here are the Microsoft computers, here are the Apple computers,
yeah.
And maybe you get a third player coming in to be an alternative to both of them.
Right.
And just like you were saying, and on this side, you have, you know, Apple doing their thing. Maybe Google uses Motorola to come out with their own handsets for mobile, and you have Samsung go and build a third one.
Right.
That's completely independent. I think that's a very exciting world if we end up there. I think it's very good for competition.
That would be. I do agree. Now,
innovation, I should say.
Then bring the next step out right now, which a lot of people are actually talking positive buzz about this BlackBerry 10.
Okay. The only thing I've heard about the BlackBerry 10 is how many times it's been delayed and stuff like that. You were now hearing good buzz about it?
I've been hearing good buzz from people that have actually used it.
Mm.
So, I mean, you know, I would think that it would be quite exciting if BlackBerry actually launched a cool product.
If BlackBerry actually rises from the dead rather than spiraling into oblivion.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that would make for quite an interesting, competitive landscape out there. Look, BlackBerry has been being bludgeoned by cheap Android phones. Okay, all right, yeah. That's been the killer, like right now. Look, Android in terms of revenue per device makes a substantial less amount than Apple does. If you look at Samsung's profits, Samsung, even though they sold twice as many phones as Apple did, made less than half as much money as Apple did. And that's including a conglomerate that includes refrigerators, washing machines, television sets, industrial equipment, all of this shit. You add all of that, they still made less than half as much money as Apple did in the last quarter.
That's
okay?
Samsung.
That's Samsung, okay? Mm-hmm. So Samsung has been selling a ton more, you know, like double the amount of phones that Apple is. But a lot of those phones are cheap-ass phones, okay? They are really cheap pieces of crap. So the reality about this is that, okay, so you've got them selling at that low end, and then all of a sudden you get another maker like Nokia or like BlackBerry all of a sudden. If BlackBerry comes out with a product that's well-priced and goes into that market, which a lot of the market that they've seen that they've been taken, and it's been by HTC and Samsung, is taking a lot of the old corporate market that BlackBerry had a grip on. Because people have been wanting more manageable devices that they can install software. People have wanted a smartphone, and everybody's like, I don't know, even like Samsung's now making fun of BlackBerry people like on their commercials lately. So you go and like you're getting that right now, but it's like if they can come and like take back some of that market share, because I know how corporate IT people are, and all of a sudden say, well, we invested in this infrastructure shit. They came out of phone that can do all this shit now. Oh, okay. Let's buy a whole bunch of these now. Fuck it. I mean, they'll probably just go and like dump those other phones just as fast as they adopted them in the first place. So, I mean, I think they've got a good opening like right now to be able to reclaim some market share. But we'll see. I mean, I don't know. It's being launched tomorrow.
I'll tell you. I think it's too late for them.
I don't know yet. I mean, they still got a nice volume of business. I know it's not anywhere nearly as it was before, but we'll see. But like I said, they've got. Let me tell you something. My discussion this last week. I've been talking a lot about mobile device management. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's the one edge that I had a discussion like it was only about 2 hours ago with people from another company where they were talking to me about the fact that they went and, oh, yeah, we're going to give all the salespeople iPads, right? A small problem that they didn't think about. They didn't think about managing tracking all these damn iPads, right?
Right.
How to manage the software, how to install updates, how to make sure that they were on the network the way they want.
How to make sure that only the stuff you want to be run on the iPads is run on the iPads.
Right. And like, you know what? You know what happened to most of these iPads? They said they fucking disappeared. Okay? They're gone. They're gone. They don't even know where the fuck they are. Okay? All right? They don't even know where the hell they are. So, so it's one of those things where, look, now, there are tools out there. I've seen. There is one company. Shit, I can't remember the name of the damn company like right now. I got it somewhere. That has some really, really cool software to manage mobile devices. And they can manage Android, Apple. They can manage all of them. I mean, one of the things that I saw that was like really neat was that they had this thing that's called geofencing, which I really liked. Okay? Mm-hmm. So the geofencing worked where, say, I give you an iPad, Sam. Okay? All right? Yep. And you're in the office. And I'm like, well, while you're in the office, I don't want you fucking around on Facebook playing Words with Friends or any of that shit. When you walk into the office, it will disable all those applications by your geographic location.
Okay.
If you walk out of the office, it will re-enable for you to be able to use all of those. So think about giving iPads to kids at school.
Right.
You don't want them fucking playing all that shit during the day. You want them to be focused on doing coursework. It would allow you to be able to manage those so that that's not happening, for example.
Okay.
And it doesn't, like, delete it or wipe it.
It just prevents the use.
It just prevents the use while you are on school time, on school premises. You can do it by hours. You can do it by location. Okay. I mean, the other part was you can also, like, for example, you can enable bring your own device, okay, to a workplace. But the one thing is that you can allow it to set the policies where you can set, you know how right now the policy is like, well, we can just remote wipe the fucking thing, right? Well, no, you can allow a more friendly policy where it's like an enterprise wipe. We only wipe out stuff that's from the company. Okay, right. Your stuff stays. Okay, so there is this movement towards that. Now the thing is that a lot of companies don't have that software. I was just seeing this is a new application that's come out from a company that's offering that like right now on the market, and there's been a lot of companies that bought it, but a lot of people don't have it now.
Right, and of course, like, I'm just thinking how it would work on Apple. You have to jailbreak the damn thing to make it.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
No.
No, you do not. Mm. You do not. This is not a jailbroken application. They actually are. They are working. They are working with Apple. They have worked with Apple to make this work. It uses, for example, it allows you to. It manages applications that are purchased through the Apple Store. It uses that. It uses that environment, and it's not jail. It's not jailbroken. Okay.
This is actually
endorsed by Apple. Okay. But the one thing about what I was saying is, well, you have to buy this in order to have it if you don't have it, right?
Right.
Now, you go to a company that already invested in BlackBerry software, a back-end server, connectivity, and whatever, whatnot. And if you tell them, like right now, hey, I got you a new phone that does all that shit that you really wanted, and you don't have to buy an Android phone, that may be an enticing thing for them to go back and buy them. Because there are a lot of people right now that I'm seeing with those headaches, like right now. So your choice would be invest in a new software or use your current infrastructure. And the thing that – look, IT managers in the back end are fucking lemmings. Okay? All right? They most of these fucking people, look, they do not go out and like seek a new technology for the most part if they're life dependent on it, because they don't want to. Oh my god, now we got to support this new thing. Oh my god, now we got to roll out this new thing. You talk to fucking IT, they're like the fucking kings of no. Okay, I mean, a lot of these are supporting like mobile devices and bring your own device, not because they wanted to, it's because they've been drag kicking and screaming to do so. Okay, by their managers and like by executives. The fucking executive went and bought an iPad. He said, "Look, asshole, make this thing work."
Yeah.
And I don't want to make this work. You fucking make it work. I read at the Apple website it works. Make it work. And they're like, "Okay, fine, we'll make it work." Okay, so. That's what I'm looking at. That the only thing why you combine a procurement department together with a lazy IT department, and all of a sudden BlackBerry comes out with a new phone, they might as well just go and buy a whole bunch of them. That may be the only saving grace that they have at this point.
We shall see.
So that's it, pretty much. It's going to be an. I think we are going to have a pretty interesting year in terms of the competitive landscape with all this stuff happening.
And that'll be fun. I mean, you know, we're kind of Apple fanboys here on this show, but at the same time, I would be thrilled and excited with alternatives that are actually really compelling and good, because that'll make Apple better too. And, you know, hey, if somebody makes something good enough, I might switch. You know, I
have not owned everything Apple my entire life. I mean, I own Motorola phones. I own other phones like whatever. Now, I mean, I got to say, look, I dearly love my iPhone. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm like, you got to pry it away from my cold dead fingers at this point. But, I mean, let's face it. If somebody comes out with something better, cooler, faster, I mean, you bet your ass I'm going to take a look at it.
I'm definitely going to take a look. Now, I mean, Apple's been very smart. They do lots of lock-in. You know, right. The way they your music and your video and your blah, 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 you buy into the whole ecosystem. And, you know, I've got hundreds and hundreds of dollars of apps at this point. You know, I mean, I've got,
I think my thing like right now is that, let's face it, I use the service, I use the back end, I have everything synchronized.
Yep.
My iPad, my Mac, my iPhone, my music, my pictures, my everything. Everybody keeps getting surprised that I show them, like, you know, on my phone, for example, I have all my pictures that are synchronized between amongst all my devices. And they're like, oh, and you've got, and I've got geotags, and I can identify faces, and I've got events. And I'm like, I got a guy with a Samsung phone who's looking at me. I'm like, yeah, you can't do that shit on your phone. Sorry. I don't care if you got NFC. I mean, really, you know. Yeah, share something with NFC. What the fuck are you going to do with that stupid chip? Go wipe your ass with it. I have yet to see two fucking people touch two fucking phones to share something. I mean, I swear to God, they put this on TV. It's one of those things that I'm like, I have yet in real life to see two people doing this.
Yes, well, anyway, there's definitely some lock-in effect going in there. That's kind of pernicious, but at the same time, you get locked in because it works.
Exactly. Because I guarantee you, if it didn't fucking work, I'd be fucking jumping off the ship in 2 seconds.
And by the way, it's not perfect. There are lots of, but it's a lot better than things were a few years ago.
And believe me, I had a Samsung phone, a BlackBerry, Outlook, all this other shit, okay, that I've been using. I'm like, you know, look, I mean, the moment I got an iPhone, I was like, I mean, I felt like I went from like the Stone Age to like, you know, the 21st century. I mean, it was just fucking retarded.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll be right back. I just have some random observations and thoughts about the particular neighborhood I live in, and I want to get Yvonne's reaction to some of this stuff.
Is the neighborhood on fire? Okay, no?
Okay. Let me look out the window. I hope not. Anyway, we'll be back after this. Okay, here we are.
So, so you know, I got approved for this TSA, like, Trusted Traveler program.
Yeah, what the hell were they thinking?
Yeah, I know. But here's a problem I've got. My last name is not Ivan M. Bo, as a lot of you, if you go on Facebook, you know.
Wait,
like
that's your last name?
It's not Bo. It's Bo Deets.
Right. I thought you meant your... Ivan M. Bo wasn't all your last name. You just mean it's not, Bo Diaz.
I'm not. Yes, it's Bo Diaz. It's not Bo. My passport says Bo Diaz. So,
and this is that Americanized thing where, you know, the traditional sort of Northern European English tradition is first name, middle name, last name. The tradition in Spanish speaking countries is a little bit more complicated. You have like your father's last name and then your mother's last name, right?
Correct. We have both last names. Okay. Yes. Which, by the way, I have burdened my son with, by the way.
Right. So, with that way of doing things, for instance, I'd be Samuel Antonio Minter Brandon.
Correct. Okay. So the thing is that when I applied for my frequent flyer card with my preferred airline, okay, I only put my first last name.
Right.
And now everything for TSA pre and safe and whatever is driven off of that. And fuck, it says here, all last name changes, as well as any other changes that cannot be handled via my account, require a written request and supporting legal documentation. Please submit these requests via fax to the American American Airlines Advantage Department. Oh, fuck.
Hey, at least you don't have to go in person and submit it in triplicate.
Well, I did, you know, for my driver's license, I did that. They freaking added my second last name to my driver's license. Of course, I keep getting, like, I had my mortgage only my first last name because my driver's license was last that. I keep getting, like, a notice that they can't match my last name and social security number. Oh, like, I've already, like, sent them the documentation for 3 years. I've finally decided to stop. I'm like, I'm done. I'm hey, like, you know what? Fuck.
You know whatever. What pissed me off? When we refinanced my mortgage, for some reason, they got whatever they started the paperwork with, used my, what was it?
Apples may know by
no, 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 it did not use that. But however, it had like, I can't remember if it had my middle name or just had the A, so Samuel A. Minter or Samuel Antonio Minter instead of just Samuel Minter. So they insisted that all of the signatures include the middle name too.
Yes.
And so, like, my signature, like, regardless of what my name is, my signature is a certain set of squiggles that I do over and over again. That's just, it's just Samuel Minter, okay? And so, suddenly, for the first time in my entire freaking life, I'm having to write a signature that's Samuel Antonio Minter or whatever. And that was such a pain in the ass. Especially because you know how mortgage crap is. You have to like sign your name like
17 different times. That's right.
And like more than that. And at least because you have to, anyway, it was a pain. It took me like half an hour, and several times I screwed up and had to initial it and then re-sign. Oh my god. Anyway, so
I've at least always signed my first name, middle name, last name. So sometimes when I have to sign with my second last name, it's okay. It's not that big a deal.
Okay. Anyway, about my neighborhood. I just had this observation, and this struck me a few times over the last few weeks, because I've been, you know, I work during the day and blah, 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 so I often end up walking my dog at, like, between 11 p.m. and midnight, okay?
Okay.
So we're walking a dog in the neighborhood, and I've noticed this before, but it particularly struck me this week. And it's like, you know, you leave my house at 11 o'clock, everybody's up, everybody's doing stuff, the lights are blazing, you know.
At 11 p.m.
11 p.m., yes. You know, like, my particular house does not begin to shut down till midnight, okay? Mm-hmm. On even normal days. But even if I go out at 10 o'clock in my neighborhood, it's like my house is blazing with lights and things are going on. Everybody else is, like, dark. I mean, not everybody else, but, like...
But that's typical.
I'm like, really? 10 o'clock? Really?
Yeah. Yeah. See, 10 o'clock.
Ah, this scared me. See now, like, to some degree, I understand this, because, like, I know, like, you know, if you have kids and you have to get them to school at, like, 7:30 in the morning, and you have to be at work at 8:30 or 9, or you're getting up at 5 in the morning, whatever, you're not staying up till midnight. You know, it just doesn't work. And I have to be at work at 8 a.m. Every day, but on a couple times a week. And so I understand that. But at the same time, like my whole schedule and shift and where me and my whole family are, like, you know, the notion of having everything shut down and being done at like 10 o'clock at night is like completely alien. And I walk through the neighborhood and it's like, where is everybody?
They're all asleep, dude.
They're
look,
all asleep.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
I was going to bring up, you know, you're like tired. It's what? It's 10:30 there.
It's 10:30, but look, because I have been getting up and look, at my new job, I have been getting up every fucking day for the last couple of years at around 6 in the fucking morning. Now I'll tell you this: that before the baby was born, I'd still be asleep. I wouldn't be going to sleep until midnight.
Right, okay.
But because I've been getting up in the middle of the night to feed the baby. Okay, all right. I have been falling asleep earlier because otherwise I just will be a wreck the following day.
So like people going to bed at 10 is like, this is a normal thing.
As I found out from other people, yes, we actually, you know, we actually, like yourself and I historically have been quite late sleepers. It's us that's the outlier, not them.
Yeah. Oh, man. Because I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Where is everybody?
They're asleep.
Of course, the same thing goes. Like, unless I have, like, one of these 8 a.m. meetings that I have a couple times a week, you know, I shift my work schedule later. I go in a bit later in the day. And, you know, and a lot of people don't have that luxury. And I realize that. A lot of people have very fixed schedules. It's 9 to 5 or it's 8 to 4 or whatever. And like I said, if you've got kids in school, school often starts way early in the morning. And I guess I understand. And I've been thinking about it myself. I'm like, look, you know, I currently have the schedule where, like, some days of the week I start at 8, some days of the week I start at 10, some days of the week I start at, you know, 9, and it varies all over the place depending on what's on my schedule that day. And I'm like, you know, for my own mental health, I'd probably be better off saying, you know, I'm going to start at 8 o'clock every day and then adjusting my schedule accordingly. Because what happens otherwise is if I'm getting up at a different time of day every day, it's like I have jet lag all the time.
Well, I get that, and I got to tell you, look, I've been trying to be a little bit consistent right now with a baby. Now, I'm probably sure, look, I don't do this out of, like, wanting to. I just...
You're tired. You know,
yeah. I mean, listen, but I don't do this also because I want to get the fuck up at 6 in the morning every damn day, for God's sakes. I mean, I just been having to, like, in order to get up, take care of the baby, take a shower, get ready, dressed, get out of the house. Normally, I always take, like, for breakfast and, like, whatever and stuff, I take an hour and a half, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, so it doesn't get that I don't get to the office until 9 o'clock. And that's my waking up at 6.
Yeah, and well, given what my commute is, on the days I have to be at work at 8 in the morning, I have to be getting up between 5 and 5:30 to make that happen.
And that's painful.
And that's painful for me. I am not a morning person. I'm an afternoon and evening person. Hi, Alex. We're almost done. But, like...
We are making cupcakes
for you. Oh, she's making cupcakes for us?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, there you go. So, anyway, getting up... I'm not a morning person. Getting up at 5 a.m. sucks no matter what for me. But getting up at 5 a.m. if I go to bed between midnight and 1 a.m., that's worse.
Yeah. Now, look, like, for example, I don't know. Now, if I'm not getting up in the middle of the night and I can have, like, one day in a week where I sleep really late, I don't give a fuck. I mean, I'll be like, I mean, I don't know. Like, last Friday, not this Friday, the Friday before, when I was some friends of mine, we had dinner late, whatever. I was having dinner at 10 o'clock. I got home like two, mm-hmm. something, whatever. I don't give a fuck. I did get up like at 8 in the morning, you know, on Saturday. But, you know, I usually get up at 8 at 9 at the latest. I mean, no matter what. But, you know, which is okay.
On weekends, you know, before I had a 3-year-old in the house, on weekends you were lucky to see me before noon. Now that I have a 3-year-old in the house, he's getting me up. If he's had a late night the previous night, he might not be up until 9:30 or 10, but that's the latest it possibly goes. And usually
it doesn't matter what time I went to bed on a Friday or a Saturday. I will be up by at the latest, like 9:30. Doesn't matter. So I don't know, but anyway yeah.
I think
you're
that's
the outlier.
I'm the outlier. It sucks. I don't know. It seems like, you know, what? I don't know. It seems like 11 didn't used to be late. It still isn't late, really, for us most of the time here. It's rare that we get to bed before midnight, but I guess, I'm the outlier.
I mean, even though I may be in bed before 11, I really don't go to sleep until 11. I will say that. Okay? So.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for joining us, everybody. That's yet another Curmudgeon's Corner. If any of you have any comments on any of the topics we talked about today, please let me know at abelsmay@abelsmay.com or Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And in the meantime, tell your friends to listen to us. As usual, we like the listeners. be in touch. And I guess that's a show, Yvonne. We'll be back next week.
Bye-bye.
So, goodbye.
Sayonara.
Goodbye. Yeah. Any more languages?
Adios.
Adios.
Adieu.
Later. Bye.